Hello and welcome to something that closely resembles and may very well be a podcast. A problem podcast where we take problems, which aren't always problems, and provide what are not always solutions. But if anyone's prepared to embrace uncertainty, it might be us. Probably. I'm Matt Parker. I am a mathematician, if you're prepared to overlook the error bars, and occasionally have been described as a comedian. Very generous. And my co-host, whose name is Beck Hill, apparently is definitely within two standard deviations of being a comedian on stage and on screen.
Oh, that's the nicest thing you've ever said about me.
That was my uncertain intro. I thought so. I think rigorously that's the most nicest thing I've ever... That encompasses the nice thing I've ever said about you. I think that's how that...
It does.
Somewhere in that range. Yeah. And there's a decent chance that on this episode...
I might be able to help you work out how to keep your bath hotter for longer.
No, you're on theme. I will be doing some business maths. Business maths.
And AOB, assumably, other believably.
Good work.
Any other business?
Now, Beck, traditionally we would do our how are you doing catch-up chat right now. However, we said last episode that because by now we will have probably definitely had a million downloads, we were going to record multiple options for this section to celebrate or not my accurate prediction of a million downloads having happened by now. That makes sense.
Yeah. So for the sake of... everyone listening, hooray! Yeah. We did it!
Hey, we did it! Woo! Pew, pew, pew.
I don't know why I'm firing guns.
we should have brought like party poppers or something. Or we did not think this through, but oh my goodness, wow,
only
what a journey.
I had two slightly deflated balloons with ones drawn on them.
Would you believe? You know what? I'm just going to add an M. Give me a second.
For any new listeners, this is in reference to the previous episode where mentioned that he helped celebrate Fibber New Year, as in the 1st of January this year was Fibonacci Day, as in 1-1-23. And Matt showed that he had two very sad looking balloons with ones drawn on them.
Yay, 1 million! 1 million.
Just put million after the ones now. He's got two of them. You yep. Hold on to those for when November comes and we have
one
2 million.
Deal.
Oh, one each. Can you bring we'll it to both. The can you bring it to the UK and I yeah. can collect it?
Fine. I might have to gently untie them and let the air out, but I will
No, I want it to be fully inflated.
I will package it up.
I want you to have to smuggle them through customs wow. under your shirt.
1 million.
Yeah, party times. Matt, how are we going to celebrate with our listeners?
Well, we did ask for listener suggestions for how we should appropriately celebrate 1 million downloads, and I don't think we're going to do any of them.
Nope, none of them.
Thanks for suggesting things like a live episode.
I mean, we will do a live Q&A. Episode at one stage, but we're not even hemisphere as most of our listeners now, never mind the same city.
No, we can't even do a live episode with our producer listening in.
No, exactly.
Someone suggested a musical episode, which I don't think anyone would enjoy.
No, I mean, I like writing musical stuff, but I don't like listening to it.
It'd be a fun writing exercise, but it would just be for us. Yeah,
and no one wants to hear us sing. I mean, you've heard me sing multiple times. It always ends up making the cut.
Yeah, but it does.
That's more because
I think it's funny.
She does. She thinks it's hilarious. That and I hold a knife to her throat and I'm like, put my music on here.
Put it in. Get me on the waves. Would I never sing for exactly the same reason.
So tell our lovely listeners how we're going to celebrate.
Yes, we're having a bit of a chat before we started recording because we figured we have to do something. And then we realized there's no better way to commemorate like a massive achievement other than a commemorative plate.
I mean, a commemorative bowl.
Yeah, a commemorative plate.
No, a bowl.
Well,
can you fit a spoon in it?
Commemorative bowl plate. Plate bowl. You can decide. You can order. We'll have both. You can pick. You're going to get the same thing no matter what you pick. But you can choose a commemorative plate versus a commemorative bowl. And whichever one we sell more of, will be the definitive what it is. How's that?
Okay, done. What I love is that because we at the time of recording this, we haven't been able to order such a product yet.
No. We had the idea and we've done nothing. That's where we're at.
Yeah, on the off chance that we can't find a specific commemorative bowl, I like the fact that people might still buy something labeled a bowl that clearly looks like a plate just to troll you.
Well, as we know, there's ample troll, ambiguity.
If you would.
Yes. When does a troll become a trait? Ooh.
Deep.
So we'll have a commemorative plate bowl of some description. And we're thinking, and again, we've not done any of the research or execution required to make this happen.
But by the time you're listening,
we think we will give, we will have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hooray, future us. Thank you, future us, for sorting this out. Let's lock future us in for a few obligations. As the reckless past us we are, I'm prepared to say we will give a free one to all our wizard level Patreon supporters.
Oh, yeah, that's our top tier, isn't it?
Yeah, there's the top tier, which is not particularly high, and we will absolutely lose money in the short term, but I feel like we must reward the Patreon supporters who've got us so far, and we hugely appreciate you all. But then, I don't know, I guess we'll do a limited run of a total number of N commemorative plate bowls.
So if people want to order them.
Will we sign them?
Oh my gosh. Number them? Oh yeah, let's sign and number them. They're commemorative, so they have to be collectible.
They're commemorative. They're collectors. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to get the whole set, you got to get in early. You don't want to have to like buy one of these later off someone who did get in early. They're gonna inflate the price right up. We may even, and this is just giving future us some wriggle room, we may even have to like, depending on what it costs to get these things done, pre-sell them, and then we'll get them all made and send them out. But we will find a way. There'll be a link in the show notes. We'll tweet it. It'll be out there. Get your commemorative plate. But you can choose commemorative plate, commemorative bowl.
Hooray!
Moving on. Beck, how have you been?
I've been good. Well, excellent. I had my first person pretending to be me online.
I saw you tweet something about this.
Yeah.
Where you're like, I'm the real Beck. So, everyone else can Beck off. But I didn't see the details.
It was quite, in fact, it was a pretty good scam. It's annoying when they're good scams because you're like, oh, that's quite easy to fall for.
Yeah, well played.
So my Facebook / Beck Hill Comedian, someone had created a Facebook profile using my pictures and then they were going through and replying to people who had left comments on my posts and pictures saying,
gotcha,
hey, thanks for the comment, congratulations, you've won the competition, check my pinned post for more details. And of course, what a lot of people will do as a shortcut. It's so clever because not everyone would have done this, but the shortcut would be to just click on the person to go to their profile.
Enough people will do that, yeah.
And then the pinned post was like, I'm doing a $1,000 giveaway for 20 of my followers. Simply comment on one of my posts and I'll choose them at random.
Yep, yep.
And so all these people are like, oh yeah, maybe I did. Oh, how cool. I accidentally entered without even realizing.
Beck does crazy things, yeah.
Yeah. It's very sweet that there were enough people out there who think that I have 20 grand to just give away to people. So it wasn't like a more recent one. And they'd like put like the details of the, you know, fake competition on my photo. It was so much effort. And then, people were replying to them, asking them to message them with details. So just contact details, but also asking for their bank details so that they could transfer money. Then I saw that people were like commenting with screenshots of bank details and stuff. And I was like, no.
No.
Yeah. And I reported the page as pretending to be me. And then I got an email from Facebook saying, oh, it doesn't go against our community standards. And I'm like, it should do. It's literally pretending to be me. And so I sent a reply and I haven't heard back, and so I tried it again from the fan page reporting it, and then I think I've successfully banned them from the page, so they shouldn't be able to do it again.
Gotcha. They can't reply to
so people should look for that if they ever converse with me.
I get the lazy automated version of that on YouTube where it's not as involved as that, but accounts will automatically steal the YouTuber's profile picture make a very similar looking account and reply to comments saying something real generic like, oh, that's interesting, let's discuss this on Telegram or something. And then they'll try and bump them onto a side channel somewhere else. And I don't know what their end game is, but because I just...
It'll be to get them on Messenger or whatever so they can eventually ask for their payment details.
Yeah, they can try and get details or something, I mean, YouTube are normally pretty good at filtering that stuff out, but every now and then there'll be a sudden spate of a bunch of very similar spam messages. Like someone's just found a loophole in the filters and suddenly the same sorts everywhere.
So be careful, everyone. Be safe.
Be careful, everyone.
But that's me. That's my news. That happened.
Good news.
Also, because as we made it on the last episode, we did need to record these both on the same day. Just due to us traveling, we wouldn't get a chance later. So we finished recording the last episode and then took a little break. And then...
Yeah, took a wee break.
You ran late for the last one because you're at the beach. I was running late for the most Beck problem, which is that I was on the toilet. And I'm quite... yep. Look, you will fairly regularly, if you're trying to get in touch with me, get a WhatsApp message saying, I'm on the loo, can't talk right now, or I'll call you after.
Yeah. But I forgot... You got it as some kind of shortcut.
But with Zoom... You'd turned on your camera and there's something just very weird. And like my camera and mic were on mute, so you couldn't see me. But there's something really weird about sending a message to someone who you can see and telling them that you're on the toilet.
Yeah, no.
I had to immediately turn the screen off and move my phone away because I was like, this is too far for me. I don't want to look at your face while I'm on the toilet. Thanks.
Not good. I feel bad enough if I'm in some kind of really boring meeting, like that I don't have to be involved with. I can easily go to the loo with my headphones on.
Oh yeah,
just to keep even that. I'm like, it's a bit unsettling.
Oh well, you know I've done that occasionally with you guys.
Oh yeah,
I've told you and Lauren that I'll have my headphones on mute.
And it's handy because you know then there's no catch up period.
It feels like I'm listening to a podcast at that stage, but it's like a very specific podcast to do with admin.
Well, have I got a change of pace for my catch-up, Beck? I have a stump date.
No. You said that the stump was gone. Yes.
Correct. In fact, for our new listeners, do you want to give everyone just a quick, as you remember it?
As I remember.
Stump date recap.
At Matt's family home, there was a big stump. And
big stump.
Each year they would try to remove the stump through digging or fire, okay, I believe.
Yep.
And each time they could never fully remove the stump.
Correct. Now, it was a bit more frequent than annual. It was just whenever there was a get-together at the Parker family residence.
That doesn't make it any better, Matt.
The fact that you weren't able to
remove it after multiple attempts per year
took multiple burnings. Now, I don't know. There are probably two types of people in the world. People who've had to remove a stump and people who haven't. Stumps are real difficult to get rid of.
Yeah, I've never removed a stump.
There's no easy way to... It's not straightforward. It's a real pain. So my parents moved into their current place since the last time I was in Australia before the pandemic. So I'd never been to this place and seen the stump. They'd moved in. There was a stump. I then got updates whenever there was a stump burning.
Yeah, stump
dates. I then passed on to our fine listeners as a stump date. And I was very keen for the day I got to go back for several reasons back to Australia, one of which was to join in the stump burning. However, they did so many burnings over the several years I wasn't there. They got rid of the stump. They had initially left what was remaining of the stump in like a hole in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But then, and my mum was keen that I get to come and at least see, you know, what was left of it.
Sorry, can I just, I have to stop for a second there because for anyone who ever sees that Matt has like over a million subscribers on YouTube and his jet set lifestyle and he's this this lecturer that people like, crave, they fly him all around the place. He's having dinner with astronauts, all that sort of thing.
It's like you're bigging this up, but carry on.
He's doing Zoom calls with Jeff Goldblum at Royal Albert Hall, whatever. And then your day-to-day life is stuff like your mum insists you come over to look at where a stump was.
Look at the stump remains.
How the mighty have fallen.
Yep. There's nothing like having family in Perth to keep you real.
Yeah.
This is life. Life is what happens between the stumps. But my dad, in a fit of gardening, buried all evidence of the stump. I missed the whole thing. I considered... digging down when I got there, but then I realized, no, Matthew, you're looking backwards. You've got to look forwards. And while I've been here this time, another tree adventure has started, and I was here for the beginning this time, which I'm finding very pleasing. My parents, with the property, have a lemon tree they don't want. And my sister and her husband have an unsuccessful lemon tree that they want to get a new one. And so I was like, look, here's what we got to do. We got to transplant across Perth a fully grown lemon tree.
Literally transplant.
Operation transplant is what I've been calling it. And it's not a straightforward process, moving a tree. It took a little bit of convincing to get everyone on board.
Yeah, they're famously stationary. Even
something we could achieve. It's a combination of effort and physics to get a tree out of the ground and across a city and into another hole. But then it turns out, like a bit like burning a stump, you want to do it in phases. My sister did some research, and what they recommend you do is initially you like dig a trench around it to sever all the roots, and then you backfill that back in again and give it a couple months to recover from the initial in its natural habitat. Then you come back 3 or 4 months later, dig it back up again, and then shift it. I'm back in Perth in a couple months anyway. There's a solar eclipse happening in Western Australia in April this year, and that feels like a compulsory thing Lucy and I have to attend. So we're going to be back to see the family in a couple months. So I was like, let's do it. We'll dig the trench now, and then we can backfill it, and then I'll come back. We dig it out again. We move it, and I was so excited that this time I got to be there right at the beginning of a tree adventure. And so me and my brother and my dad, one afternoon, a couple of days ago, set about digging the initial, you know, earthworks to get this thing going. And we dig down through all the roots. And you wouldn't believe what we hit. We hit stump.
What?
Stump. We hit one of the major roots that would have come off the tree that gave us the stump.
Oh, it lives.
So I was like, what's this? I'm like, this is a bigger root than the lemon tree. Massive Jarrah root. I'm like, it's the stump. And so I got to get an axe and cut through one of the roots from the original stump. So
wow.
I got to partake in the clearing of the stump because I had to cut through one of its roots to liberate the lemon tree.
And do you have it now?
Do I have the chunk of root I had to cut out?
Yeah.
You know I do. Right, let me go grab it. Hang on, wait here.
Yeah, I knew I could rely on you.
I should have brought it through. Hang on.
He's got a root.
There it is.
Wow, that's a nice chunk of wood.
Thank you. It was Jarrah.
The double entendres in this, by the way. This is how amazed I am by what you're showing me, is that I haven't gone for any double entendres, even though they're right there.
There's been very few root jokes, very few wood jokes. Great work.
Thank you.
There it is. Look at that chunk.
It's bigger than I expected.
Yeah, there you go. So now I've got a massive chunk of original stump.
Wow.
And I don't know what to do with it. So I'm open to suggest. What do you think, Beck? What should I do with this?
Well, there's several options. You know me. I love burning stuff. So my initial reaction is...
You do. Yeah.
Take it back to your cool bonfire at home.
My mass fire pit.
Your fire pit and burn it in there. But that is a really nice... That's a nice chunk of material you got there. And that feels... It feels like a bit of waste.
I like the idea of making something out of it. I was thinking, what if I got it sliced up into like coasters?
Ooh.
Sliced and then varnished or oiled or whatever. Make some Jarrah coasters.
That was someone who knows about wood.
Yeah. So listeners, tell you what, I'll get some photos of this.
Mm-hmm.
We'll share those. I want suggestions. What should I do with the stump that I thought was gone and buried and never to be seen again?
It's aproblemsquared.com and select solution. And maybe just chuck the word wood in there or root in capitals so it's easier for us to find.
Yeah, put stump. Make sure you put stump because I'll just search for stump later and then I'll find all the suggestions.
Stump.
So,
okay.
Stump. So there you are. The stump date lives on. Piece of the stump.
This story went way better than I could have ever imagined. But I did think you were going to say that
thanks.
You saw where the stump had been and then you secretly planted a seed for a Jarrah tree.
Oh, for a new one.
Because that is a long game, joke. That is
real long game.
Really long.
Yeah. Our first problem today, back, has been sent in on the problem posing page at aproblemsquared.com from Anastasia, who says, well, first of all, they say, hey, Beck and Matt, you guys are great. Love the podcast.
I love when people send that.
Thanks, Anastasia.
Even if we don't answer their problems, it's nice.
They go on to say, also, I have a problem. They're just having a bubble bath. I guess they listen to podcasts in the bath. That makes sense. And over time, it's obviously gotten colder. That's deep. That's the universe for you. but also, the bubbles have decreased. So I started wondering whether bubbles make a bath stay warm for longer because of the trapped air in them. Thinking face emoji. And the problem is, how do I keep my bath warm the longest? Smiley face emoji. So, Beck, the problem is, well, I guess the question is, do bubbles in a bubble bath keep it warmer longer? And the problem is, how do you keep a bath the warmest for the longest?
Ah, well, first of all, Anastasia, thank you for sending a bath-related problem in, because I love baths and it gave me an excuse to take baths and call it science. So, first of all, yes, Anastasia's correct. The bubbles do make a bath stay warm for longer because of the trapped air. It creates an insulation that stops the water from evaporating or, you know, leaving heat radiation, that sort of thing.
Because the way I was thinking of it is normally you'd have hot water and then air contacting it. The air would heat up and then convect away and new cold air would fill its place. That would then absorb more heat from the water. Whereas I guess the bubbles, they stop that convection loop because it warms up the air in the bubbles, but then it doesn't go anywhere. It's like, it stays here.
Yeah, well, it certainly slows it because the structure eventually breaks down in the bubbles.
Oh, yeah, the bubbles burst. Yeah.
So that they will eventually.
You stay warmer for longer. Yeah.
You do. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff out there about how actually using bubble bath is, you know, it's not so much about making you clean. It's just about keeping your bath warmer for longer so you don't have to use as much energy. You don't have to refill the bath. Oh. And I've often said this because Gavin, my husband, he doesn't mind some bubbles, but he doesn't. I like to have as many bubbles as possible. I like to have enough bubbles that I can hide in the bath and that you can't really see me. That's my favorite type of amount of bubbles where, like, it's just two eyes poking out from a sea of bubbles.
Comedy film levels of bubbles.
Oh, totally. Yeah. That's my, it's just something to play with, put in your head, pretend it's a beard. It's always, I've never aged out of that, and I hope I never do. I hope that even when I'm at an age where I need a walk-in bathtub, I still want to
be
sticking bubbles on my head. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, got it. Love it. Great. There are no downsides to the bubbles is what you're trying to say.
Exactly. But Gav doesn't like the bubbles. He just finds them annoying. Oh. He doesn't like the feeling of too many bubbles. He's just not. What we tend to do is if I run him a bath, I'll do obviously always too much bubbles. And then we have to use the shower head to sort of water them down a bit so that they.
Oh, you de-bubble.
They become like condensed.
Does that work?
And
as long as you don't re-lather it, then it stays flat.
Yeah, kind of.
So what you're saying is, that Gav likes a flat white of the bubble bath world, and you're in a cappuccino bubble bath world.
Our baths are the same as our coffee preferences.
There you go. You're consistent in your opinion on foam.
Okay, now just as a side quest, I need to know if that's a thing for everyone. If you have a preference, you need to have a preference in coffee for this to work. I think if you don't have a preference or if you don't drink coffee, I don't want anyone like, oh, well, I don't normally, but sometimes I have flat white, but it's just whatever they give to me. I don't care. What I want to know is if you have a preference for a type of coffee and a preference for amount of bubbles in the bath, do you find that those two correlate? Are they the same?
I can provide one more data point because I'm a flat white kind of person. And I'm also not a big bubble bath kind of person. I have to admit, I'm there with the minimal bubbles as well. Whoa. So,
What does Lucy drink?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, she's definitely, and I hate to run this down gender stereotype lines, I think she's pro bubbles. But she would be a flat white.
I know she likes bath salts, though.
She's like, yeah, that's true.
I know because I've had a bath at your place and there were bath salts and I was like, ooh.
Yeah, you put our bath salts on the internet, if I remember correctly.
I did because they were called like, Dr. Salt. And I was like, oh, it's like
something like that.
Dr. Pepper's brother or whatever.
Yeah, you're like, I didn't study this long to be called Mrs. Salt.
Oh, that was it? Yeah. Okay, go ask her.
Yeah, Lucy does not conform. She's a flat white and lots of bubbles in the bath. Mm. So
we need more data points.
I mean, that's why I love that woman. She bucks the trend.
So when this episode comes out, we'll do a poll.
Bubble or nubble?
If you have a preference for coffee, the amount of bubbles you have in coffee, i.e. flat white, latte, cappuccino, does it match your bubble bath preference in baths? Yes or no? And then if you want to elaborate,
right,
and say, yes, I have flat white and this, or yep, no, I have a cappuccino, but I don't like bubbles, then you can do that in the replies. That'll just be extra data.
Got it. And so don't partake in the survey unless you have opinions on both bubble baths and coffee, milk-based coffee.
Yeah.
And then we just want to does it match or not? That's all we're after.
Yeah.
What about the fact that I traditionally drink my coffee, just black coffee, and I'd tend to rather have a shower? Hmm. I mean, that's no frills either way.
The black coffee equivalent is having nothing in your bath.
You just go and sit in there for a while and contemplate the world.
Okay. I don't want to hear from you if you're a shower person, don't have baths.
No, your opinion is invalid. Got it. Okay.
All right. So now we're away from our side quest. We've done. We've got our side quest.
Okay. Meanwhile,
I was happy with the amount of evidence out there that bubbles make the bath stay hotter for longer. I wanted to see if you put anything more in the bath, would it? Apparently, salts can make the bath stay hotter for longer because salt water holds heat for longer than pure water.
Different specific heat, I can see that.
Bath oils act like an insulator as well. And so I thought I'll do a control bath first. So Mum's got massive baths.
Very good of you.
It's great.
Yep.
So I did a control bath. And so I measured the temperature of the bathroom, which I know because Mum has a thermostat. And so the bathroom is at a very comfortable 26 degrees.
Ooh, lovely.
Mm, yeah, it was very nice. And then I filled the bath and I made sure I measured how far the water was from the top so that when I did the experiment again, I'd be able to know.
Be consistent. Yeah, nice.
And so I ran my bath. And this is where I started to realize how many variables there are, because the way that I run my baths is I tend to run them far too hot and then I let them... Okay. Cool a bit, or I then stick in the cold water. Yeah.
You overshoot the mark and then wind it back.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll come back to that as well, but I just want to point that out, that that's how I do it, because I will come back to that. So I ran my hot bath and then I put cold water in until it was the right temperature for me.
Did you measure the temperature, or was this just
first I put in my finger, I did the thing where I was like, oh, this is the temperature that I'd want to get in. And then realized, oh, I need an actual thermometer. So I've used my mum's meat thermometer because there wasn't anything else.
Right. Yep.
Had to give Sarah clean before she roasts.
It's a thermometer.
So we put the meat thermometer in the bath and turns out, now I'll be honest, when I did get in, I was like, actually I've made this. This is actually hotter than I wanted, but I'd already done all the other measurements. Because normally I wouldn't get in.
You're not doing more measurements.
It was 43 degrees.
Oh, dang, and that is hot.
You know it's hot when you can see the pink line on your limbs? And so I was like, okay, I've made a mistake here, but I'm this far ahead and I can't go back.
I love the fact that the level of discomfort of sitting in 43 degree water is less than your discomfort in having to redo a data measurement.
This is how I roll. I'm very comfortable in being uncomfortably hot. I get cold real easy. I don't like being cold. I do not mind being too hot. So
that was not a risk here.
I had the bath, but then the problem with that is that it didn't really go down in temperature for ages. So I ended up having to sit in the bath for an hour and a half. And I got really dehydrated, by the way, guys. You should definitely drink water before doing any experiments like this. Yep. And
because you're basically in a very wet sauna.
Yeah. And then by the time I came out, and I did that, I made sure like the window was shut so that the temperature of the bathroom stayed the same. And then when I got out an hour and a half later, I remeasured the water and it was 37.7 degrees or 37.8.
That's a reasonable bath temperature.
Yeah. Yeah. So by the time I got out, it was like a reasonable temperature because that's like almost body temperature, right? And that's, our ideal. Yeah. But that's not a huge shift when you think about it.
No, it's not.
It's a very small amount. And that's without bubbles or anything. And then I was like, well, again, I've already gone this far. So the next day.
Yep.
26 degrees, same air temperature in the bathroom.
Yep.
Decided to recreate it, but with a cup of bath salts, half an ounce of bubble bath.
And this is all in the same bath?
In the same bath. And then I did 2 teaspoons of baby oil. Because I was like, well, I'll do all of them and see just...
just everything.
If everything together. And made sure the temperature was the same getting in. So I scolded myself getting in again.
Another scolding bath. Yep.
And
only you could have a sunk cost fallacy in a bath.
And then an hour and a half later, which I'll be honest, I think I've lost a lot of weight for just 2 days of baths that are far too hot for me. I measured it and it was the exact same from the day before without bubble. It was 37.7 degrees. It was at this point that I was like,
"Yep,
I think I'm in too warm a temperature, at like atmosphere, like climate, I should say, for
right
to really properly measure this experiment, because even though the air outside the bath is less than the temperature of the bath itself, it's a pretty comfortable amount. So it's going to slow that process right down. It's not exactly cold air that the water's coming in contact with.
I don't know if this would be the case, but it feels like your body temperature and the bath temperature are just equalizing. So the bath's cooling down to the point where your body is warming it back up again. And so it's just plateauing out once it reaches Beck temperature.
Yeah, possibly. I think it would get colder.
I don't think a human body is enough to keep a bath warm.
No, it's not. I can tell you that from my would a fluffy coat keep you insulated from the heat experiment.
Gotcha.
In a previous episode. My core body temperature will stay the same, or should stay the same for a long time, but my skin temperature is different, and that would do what it could to try and cool itself down. So anything that's outside of the water will try and release any heat. So both the water and my body are going to try and release the heat.
Everything is getting rid of heat.
Because the air temperature outside of it isn't that much lower, then I'm
26 degrees.
Yep. I'm keeping it warmer for longer because nothing's cooling me down. That there was no air movement and there's nothing to help me cool down, especially. So I sort of gave up the experiment at that point. And realize
good
that...
Good work. I'm having whiplash in your approach to the sunken cost fallacy. At one point, you're like, well, I'm in too deep, better push on. And then you're like, ack, write the whole thing off.
Well, because what I was going to do is then try it like with just bubble bath or just bath salts body oil. But after doing like what felt like the two extremes and then comparing them, and they're getting the same result. I was like, well, this isn't helpful at all. I then realized, because I did some research, that one of the solutions for keeping a bath hotter for longer is to preheat the bathtub, because the bathtub itself will start to disperse the heat depending on how well insulated the bathtub is. Obviously, not all baths are created equal. And if you have a bath that doesn't have any proper insulation around it, then that bathtub itself will cool down quicker. Or if you're putting hot water into a cold bathtub, then it will take on some of that and disperse it more quickly. Whereas if the bathtub is already hot, then it will take longer for the hot water inside to disperse the heat, because
it's like making a coffee. You want to preheat your coffee making equipment so you don't lose all the temperature from the water.
If you're a nerd, sure.
Correct.
It is like a coffee. We're always bringing it back to coffee. And so...
I've only got one thing and I'm making it work.
I love it. No, it's perfect. It does work. It's a really good comparison. So then I realized that's the way that I run my baths, where I run all hot water first. That's what I'm doing. I'm preheating the tub because I'm making it hotter than it needs to be before cooling it down. So then it's in that time, it's heating up the bathtub. And I was like, oh, there's all these variables and it's not even easy for me to measure them all. Also, my home is in a state that is quite prone to droughts. And while they did have a pretty wet season this year, I can't keep having baths that...
Bath after bath after... Yeah, it's a lot of water.
So, in order to help answer Anastasia's question, I'm going to need the help of our listeners. And I'm aware that we've asked a lot of our listeners already. But if anyone, like me, loves a bath and you're having them regularly, and it's a lot colder over there right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot colder in the UK. I say over there, but like, it depends where you're listening.
Yeah.
But if you're based in the UK or anywhere that's cold, or especially anywhere that's colder than the UK, and you have a bath and you are able to measure the temperature of the room, the temperature of your bath, I would love to know. I don't want people to do too much. Obviously, do what you like. The more data, the better. Yeah. But if you wouldn't mind having two baths where you change our variable to see what keeps it hotter for longer. So what I'll need from you, if you're wanting to help out with this experiment, is I'll need to know the air temperature of your bathroom, the temperature of your bath before you get in, the temperature of your bath after you get out.
Yep. Yep. Sometime later.
How long your bath was for, and your bath technique. So whether you fill up the hot water first and then cold water, whether you try and get the water the perfect temperature from the start, whether anything that you do that might be different. And then if you could do the same again, but change variables that are within your bath and let me know if the results differ.
So everyone, get on over to the problem posing page at problemsquared.com. And give us your bath results. At some point in the future, we'll report back.
Yeah. And then hopefully you'll have your answer solutions. Then, Anastasia.
I'm going to withhold the ding for now until we have some more dingable data.
This wing ding / dinglet comes from Cedric, who says, say you are a salesman tasked with acquiring new customer accounts throughout a year. Now, at the end of the year, you are tasked with planning for your next year's sales numbers. You need to estimate how much more these new customers will buy next year compared to this year. You know, however, that accounts that were acquired in January had the whole year's worth of sales on the books, while accounts opened at the end of the year only bought for 1 month. So you expect early accounts to increase very little and accounts open later to increase significantly. What I want to calculate is, if all other things remain constant, what would the overall percentage increase be just due to the variance in when the accounts started buying? Matt, I didn't understand any of that. I read the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I was thinking halfway through, I don't know what any of this means at all.
Yep. There's business for you. Business. So Cedric manages salespeople. That's the short version of this. And so he hires someone as a salesperson and says, right, we make great products here, or whatever they do. I don't know, actually. Go sell those products. Get us new customers. Yeah. They find a customer. They're like, hey, you want to be our customer? And the person's like, you're right, I do. And then you assume, henceforth, they put all their business through you. And so just as an assumption to make life a bit easier, we're assuming once one of these salespeople gets a new customer, they're just now constantly ordering through their company to get these things. So the spend is, you can just assume it's just a constant rate. The problem is, when you got salespeople, there's like, obviously you get new customers and they spend money, but then you want to know, are they spending more? Are they spending less? Like, you want to be able to track the amount of spending they're doing. The issue is, if in the first year, you got a new customer halfway through the year, across the entire year, they're only buying for 6 months. And the next year, they're buying for 12 months. So on paper, they've doubled their spend. But you're like, well, hang on. But, you know, that wasn't because they're buying any more. It's just because they've been buying for longer.
That's an assumption there, that whenever you do the, and I'm sure it is the case, but when you do these calculations, you're always doing it on like a yearly basis. Would it not make more sense just to have a different thing for each customer?
I suspect, and again, I'm not a business person, so I don't know the full details. I think it's probably things like annual bonuses, end of year accounts. I think the business world lives and dies by the four quarters of the business year. So I think there's a that they want to be able to chunk things into years. And you're right. It'll be better if every customer had their own separate cycle, because then you could compare it a lot better. But I guess customers come, customers go. They want some kind of just sense of how do you compensate or allow for the natural increase, because they've been a customer for more of the year than they were before, versus any genuine increase in the amount of spend because maybe you got a particularly good salesperson. And Cedric did send me through, they had a stab at trying to work this out mathematically and hit a dead end. It's not a straightforward thing to work out. But if I know one thing about business, again, not a business guy, if I know one thing about business, you want to make a slide deck. So I actually made a one slide presentation to send back to Cedric with my results.
Oh, great.
On when I work this out for them. But I thought I'd try and, given this is an audio medium, describe it to you and then see if that works. And then we can always make the deck available if people want to have a look at what I actually did.
Okay.
But I imagined drawing like a bar to represent a customer buying things. So if they were buying things for the whole year, that the bar would be the length of the whole year. If they were only buying things for half a year, the bar would be half as long, quarter of a year would be much shorter again. Mm-hmm. And so I imagine that a new salesperson is bringing on clients at a regular rate, like a new client every month, let's say. And this is within the assumptions that Cedric said kind of work with their business. And so I was like, well, you're going to, let's say you bring on 12 clients, one a month. Your first client's going to be a bar that's the whole length of the year. The next one's going to be a bit shorter. But I drew that kind of above it. Next one's going to be a bit shorter again, and then a bit shorter again, and a bit shorter again, and a bit shorter again. You're actually making like a triangle. You've got a long one at the bottom, and then each one above it gets a bit shorter. Then the second year, they're all full length bars. So you've got a massive rectangle. And actually, the triangle is half the area of the rectangle. Because they're getting consistently shorter all the way up.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's half. So in fact, if you... And this goes, it's not just salespeople, it's not just clients. If you've got anything where things start consistently, and once they start running, they produce consistently, then if they're gradually starting up over the course of some time period, let's say a year, and then they continue running for another time period, the second time period will have double the output of the first one.
Yeah.
Just by a nature of their coming online gradually, and then they continue running. And it's such a quick, simple, geometric way of doing it, and the answer drops out and is quote-unquote obvious. Whereas if you try and do it algebraically or working it out, it's a mess, absolute nightmare. And that's one of the things I love about mathematics. Sometimes it's just the way you approach the problem, the way you think about it, makes a difference to how hard or how easy it is. And a lot of the time when people say, oh, that person's good at maths, or oh, they solve things quickly, they've just seen more problems and they know more ways of going about it and ways to think about it. And so I'm like, when I heard the problem, I'm like, I bet there's a geometric way to picture this, which will make sense.
Does that only work if the new customers being acquired, is it also at a constant rate?
Yes, yeah, so it requires that assumption. You'd have a different shape if they were coming in a different rate.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is if you think about it, because I already kind of gave part of the game away when I said, imagine one customer starting in the middle of the year.
Yeah.
Because well, that's straight away doubles. You see it doubles. Yeah.
I've only just managed to understand what the problem is, I think. Because basically what they want to know is, let's say the customer, if we're going to keep this customer for the oncoming years, how many commemorative plates are we going to need to have in stock in order to supply the customer next year?
Yeah.
So is it not similar to how you worked out when we would hit a million listeners? Like, are you not just looking at previous data? So if a customer came on in November, so they've only been buying for 2 months, wouldn't you just take what they bought in that 2 months and then go, okay, well, let's times that by 6 because that's 12 months.
But what the difficulty lies in, how do you then sum that up across a bunch of customers? And where Cedric got caught in a knot was they were like, oh, ones that start in January will be the same. They will be a 0% increase. And the ones that start in February, well, they've got 11 twelfths. So they're going to have one more. It's an extra 11th because of the length of the year. And so what Cedric was trying to do is take that approach of the same rate, but over more time. but then work it out for a bunch of different ones and find a way to how do you combine them?
How do you do it for all the customers as opposed percentage? To just doing each individual customer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Whereas geometrically, you don't have to do any of that. You just look at it and you're like, oh, it doubles. And that's the same result you'd get if you then did a whole bunch of individual hypothetical customers and then add them all up and then work out what the total percentage increase would be. You'd get the same answer. But it's
what
just
would
a
happen
long, complicated
if,
journey.
If the customers being acquired were at non-normal, nothing that creates a nice geometrical shape.
Yeah, then you'd have to... I mean, what you could do in reality is get a bunch of previous data, which is what I kind of did last episode when I was doing the prediction for a million, was not try and work out what the shape was, just look at the data that and just know... Like, I had to know over what interval to average to then get the previous shape, not try and name it or work out what it is, and then just duplicate it to predict the future.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in a messier situation, that's what you would do. Whereas... Mm-hmm. Cedric gave me a bunch of assumptions saying they come on roughly evenly and they continue to spend about the same. But in reality, what's actually happening is they are hoping the customers will buy more over time because the commemorative plates are just so good. And what they want to be able to do is work out how much of that their good product, their good sales, their good whatever, and how much is just they've been customers for a longer amount of the year. And so this doubling as a kind of a baseline means they can kind of compensate for that. And anything above that is a genuine increase. That's not just the effect of having more customers. And over a big enough company with enough customers, the variations will all kind of average out. And so that's just kind of a nice, you know, handy way to know what's a genuine increase and what's just they've been buying stuff for longer increase.
Yeah.
Do you want to see the slide?
Yeah, of course I do.
I'm curious to know how close, I labeled it year one and year two, and then you got customers coming on, making a triangle, and then you got a rectangle.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I envisaged. That's very pleasing.
There you are. That was my solving a business problem using a diagram.
It was a very nice diagram.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very satisfying. You should put that on a t-shirt, Matt. Put that on a commemorative plate.
That's your solution. I should. Oh, commemorative plates at the time I solved that problem with a diagram. We're not doing that, everyone. I feel like commemorative plates are going to be a slippery slope.
Like your diagram.
Not my diagram. Number of plates. Number of hilarious joke-related plates released in a year.
Slash bowls.
Same
thing. Well, I'm going to give that a ding.
Hey, a business ding.
Geometric business ding. GBD.
Now, I know you're thinking that was a lot of business, but what about if there was any other? And there is. Thank you to everyone who sends in comments, feedback, and add-ons, additions to our previous solutions, including David, who jumped on to the problem-posing page at problemsquared.com and flagged up. Well, actually, Beck, I'll let you handle this one because it was when you were talking about the reviews of the Bell Tower in Perth on TripAdvisor.
Yeah. So David said during a Problem Squared 050, you briefly mentioned the circle rating for the Bell Tower in Perth on TripAdvisor and gave a small chuckle about it because we were laughing about how it's five circles.
It's like dots. Yeah.
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 Now, David pointed out that the reason for the circles is so that people don't get confused with the star ratings for hotels, because if you were to, you know, give something a 5-star rating on TripAdvisor, that's not the same as the, you know, the proper star rating that is given to hotels. And so you don't want people getting confused. And I think that's fair enough. Yeah, so, I think it makes sense.
Yeah. If someone sees a hotel on TripAdvisor with a 4-star rating, it doesn't mean they're going to have a hot food service menu across certain hours as is required of a 4-star hotel or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, exactly. But David also pointed out that the internal name for them are bubble ratings. Isn't that cute?
Yeah, bubbles.
Bubbles.
I feel like David, if that is their name, is a, you know, anonymous source from within the TripAdvisor machine.
Seems to be.
Wow. Well, I give David a 5-bubble rating.
So thank you, David.
And someone else chipped in to let us know that the Scottish tune played on the bells is called Craglia. How would you pronounce that, Beck?
So that was the... Right. I was thinking Scottish Tuners in the Robert Burns one in Perth.
Yep.
But they're pointing out that Waltzing Matilda is a Scottish tune. Yeah, so apparently it's called the Craigielee, written in around the 1800s and was adapted to be the music for Waltzing Matilda by Banjo Paterson.
Oh, so I did not know it was a Scottish tune.
There's your Scottish link again.
Again. Classic Perths. And finally, a huge thanks to everyone who listens to this podcast, particularly those of you who give us a 5-bubble rating on whatever your bubble rating platform of choice may be, and particularly those of you who put your money where your bubbles are and you support us on Patreon.
Because this has been a bubble-heavy episode, hasn't it?
Thanks. We hugely appreciate all our Patreon supporters. Not only are we giving free commemorative plates to the top tier, the wizard tier of our Patreons, but we pick 3 names at random every time to thank, which this time includes...
Remo!
Craig Anderson.
Erland Bakbu.
So thank you very much to them and everyone else on a Patreon. And that's it for the podcast. Or is it? I think it is. It probably is. I've been Matt Parker for the vast majority of the time, and I'm fairly certain I was joined by Beck Hill, if that is your name.
So, Matt.
Yeah.
You know how we didn't have anything for our post credits?
No, it was a real void at the end of the show last time.
Yeah. Well, I think it'd be nice if the listeners can get to know us a bit better.
Oh.
So, okay. I thought I would find out.
I feel like we overshare enough in the main episode, but carry on.
I thought you might want to know what tree sign you are.
What?
Yeah. There's a quiz online. What kind of tree are you? Find out your tree astrology with
Love
Celtic
it.
Tree astrology.
That's great.
You can always trust a sign that repeats itself.
Yes. Yep.
So you don't have to do anything.
Questions you answer.
No, you don't have to do anything, actually. But I thought, you know, you did your stump date. So I thought you might want to know what tree sign you are. So I know that your birthday's in December.
Correct.
So you're an elder tree. The seeker.
An elder tree.
Yeah. Elder types tend to be freedom loving and sometimes appear to be a bit wild compared to the other Celtic tree astrology signs. In younger years, you may have lived life in the fast lane. And as a thrill seeker, you and your boogie board, you are often misjudged as an outsider and you have a tendency to be withdrawn despite your extroverted nature. You tend to be very considerate of others and genuinely strive to be helpful. These acts of assistance are sometimes thwarted by your brutal honesty. Elder signs fit well with older and holy signs.
What a series of wide sweeping statements that would apply to anyone. I haven't had a cold reading that good all week.
Do you want to know what I am?
I want to guess. You tend to be extroverted, except for times when you just want to be by yourself. Is that right? Am I getting that right?
No, actually.
What tree are you,
Beck? It's not
Beck?
Bad. First of all, mine's not even a tree. I'm a reed. That's not even a tree.
What?
I'm a grass.
You got a tree.
Reeds.
Dang.
Among the Celtic tree astrology signs are the secret keepers. Now, that's a lie. I cannot keep a secret to save my life. I nearly gave away precious secrets on this very podcast. You dig deep inside to the real meaning of things and discover the truth hidden beneath layers of distraction. Nope, I never get past the layers of distraction. I am constantly... stuck in the layers of distraction.
Famously as much as I undistractable.
When there is a need to get to the heart of the matter, the reed sign will most certainly find the core. That's, to be fair, you know me, I love a deep dive. I will get distracted, but I will do the deep dive.
Yep.
You love a good story and can be easily drawn in by gossip, correct. Scandals, sure. Legend and lore, yes. These tendencies also make you an excellent historian, no. Journalist, detective or archaeologist, nah. Maybe detective, but archaeologist, nah.
I'll give you detective. Yeah.
I do like digging things up, though. You love people because they represent a diversity of meanings for you to interpret. That's what I'm doing right now. Reed signs join well with ash or oak signs. Whoa.
You know what, Beck?
Mm.
If I was you, I wouldn't read too much into it.